Welcome to another episode of the Amazing Places podcast. My name is Dean Murdoch. I'm a former municipal councillor, and I decided to start this podcast as a celebration of those people-centered, dynamic places and spaces around the capital region and all over the world. Today, we're going to talk about some of the changes that have happened around the capital region as part of the pandemic response. During this period, we've seen a number of changes to streets all over Greater Victoria, including removing parking spaces in favor of pedestrian priority zones, patios, and parklets. This has created a much more people-centered walking dynamic in the community. Perhaps this is something that represents a much larger shift. Are we witnessing the end of commuter culture? My guest today is the author of a website that you've probably already heard of, Sidewalking Victoria. Today, I invited the author of that website to join us for a conversation about the changes we're witnessing around Greater Victoria in response to the pandemic and what they might tell us about the future of commuting. Please welcome Thomas Guerrero.
Thank you so much for having me, Dean. This is actually an exciting thing. I've listened to the first couple episodes, and it's been actually a great to have this new podcast in Victoria. I think it's actually something that we've been lacking, and particularly with your focus on placemaking and that sort of urbanism, something that we've definitely needed in Victoria.
Well, thank you very much. I'm really delighted that I get to have great guests like yourself on to talk about great ideas and things that are going on in the community that we want to celebrate, and maybe some things that are going on in the community that we want to advocate to change. You run a website that features your, I guess, your observations. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what folks might be able to find if they were to visit that site?
So I've been writing Sidewalking Victoria since about 2015, and it's kind of just my little outlet on city life in Victoria, but also looking at the cities generally and you know, what makes them work. And I think I come at it from a somewhat distinct point of view, and that it's pretty much focused on looking at cities from a pedestrian point of view. If you go on there, you'll see things about some walks around town you can take, or some great little urban oasis parks that we have in the region. Really a little bit of everything on there.
COVID-19 and our response to it, the public health measures that we're all abiding by, have really changed the way that we use our streets and use shops and businesses. We'd love to get the benefit of your perspective on what you're seeing change out there.
Really, this has had a tremendously negative impact on the city. There's no doubt about that. I think that we have to look for ways to try to remedy that. I did actually a series of blog posts on sort of restarting business downtown, and some of those things were, first of all, we had to encourage making space for the people that are here. So there is still the people that live downtown and a few people that are now starting to come back into work, and so we need to make space for them so that they can move around the city safely. And that I think has happened. I think that the city of Victoria certainly has taken some good steps in that direction in making some spaces, certainly in our urban centers around the city. There's also the impact of not having tourists coming to the city, and that's again a massive change, especially with the daily unloading of cruise ship passengers that we used to see come into the area around Government Street and James Bay. A lot of the people will be going out to restaurants and cafes during the day. Over the next little while, we have to do our bit to try to support local businesses. For those of us that are fortunate enough to still have our jobs, go and shop down on Lojo in our great local retailers, and definitely go out and enjoy our local restaurants, because they're hurting right now, and if we can help them get through this period, what it's going to do is actually create a greater small retail environment for the future, for when our tourists come back, because it is one of the things that makes Victoria so great, is that we have such an amazing small business community. Go out there and support those small businesses.
What are some of those things that you're seeing that you think might be creating a more conducive, welcoming environment?
When you think about downtown Victoria, and some of the things that we've been waiting for so long, I think that, and just to be clear, I have a car, I drive my car, but for too long we've had, especially our downtown areas have been too much focused on car storage and moving cars around. And I think that one of the great opportunities we've had in the last couple of months has been to test out some new things. And you've seen it not just in Victoria, with testing out creating these people spaces. so that, you know, people can move safely but still actually get out and enjoy the city. Turning Government Street into a pedestrian walkway has been talked about since, you know, the mid-60s. You know, when they created the pedestrian mall that we had up until this point, from, I think it was built in mid-70s or maybe early 80s, really the original plan had been for it to be fully pedestrianized, and just that pushback from business lobby on this fear of not having people be able to access their stores by vehicle has been so strong. And here we have a chance to put, I think, a bit of a wedge in that and say, you know what, actually, if we're going to have people come to stores downtown, the way we need to do it is by creating space for people. I mean, I don't know if you've had a chance to go down to Government Street in the last few weeks, but it's just such a phenomenal experience, especially, you know, in the great weather we've been having in the last few days. Just so vibrant to see all those patio spaces being used, you know, people just wandering around. And the thing is that, you know, a lot of the people that are down there, they're all locals, first of all, and maybe a few tourists from you know, the mainland or up island, but most of it's locals, also just to actually enjoy being out near other people. Because I think that's one of the things that, you know, one of the other things that's had a big impact on people is just that being away from other people during this whole crisis. And I think that this, that opportunity to be in, you know, a large safe space with other people has been a great joy for people. And you just see it when you're down there. And one of the things that excites me about actually the Broad Street closure is that you start to think about those pedestrian zones you see in Europe, where you have, you know, the cores of cities have been turned into pedestrian zones. And the fact that the city decided to expand a little bit beyond that Government Street space, actually, I find quite exciting. And I would love to see some more areas tried as well.
You know, I think what helped to precipitate that change on that section of Broad Street was the cooperation among the businesses in agreeing that they would give up those parking spaces, that they would work with the city to create that closure of the road to vehicles so that it could become more of a plaza or a piazza. Although there are unique circumstances that contribute to that Broad Street project being successful, I think once we can demonstrate that those kinds of road closures to vehicles can be successfully achieved, that we can enliven those spaces by dedicating them to pedestrians, allowing people to congregate, and ideally we'll start to see that replicated. I think that businesses can succeed by trying really a very old model of how they reach their clients and giving their clients an opportunity to spend more time enjoying the experience.
You know, there's still a need to have you know, vehicle space moving around downtown, and certainly as long as we have both public and private parkades right near Broad Street, I mean, there is at least three parkades in that area. And then on top of that, we now have amazing 4th Street bike lanes right there as well. You know, that's going to allow for a new customer base to be coming down those bike lanes. And then, you know, encouraging people to either walk, bike, or if they have to, you know, park in a parkade.
What may happen with those retail settings is that if it becomes more of a pedestrian priority area, we may see shops start to push some of their merchandise out into the sidewalk, into the frontage of their space. It really has the effect of enlivening the space, of creating more of animation and that relaxed kind of setting where you get to meander through and see if something catches your eye. And maybe if it does, you'd go inside and try it on in the case of clothing, or maybe you'd thumb through some books.
Well, definitely. And, you know, I just posted an article on Sidewalking Victoria on that point. You know, I talk about it in the article as permeability, which is a common term used in urban planning, that you really do want to have things, you know, you want your services along the street to be sticky for customers, your clients. Best way to do that is to really reach out and grab them. And I don't mean that, you know, physically, but, you know, reach up and grab their attention. You see that, you know, so great in Chinatown. Or an example I use in my article is the patch on Yates Street, which puts some of their clothes out on racks on the street. And what that does is, you know, gives you that opportunity to just take a look at what, you know, somebody has to offer, pick through it maybe a little bit, and then you know what's inside that store. You know, if we see more of that over time, we'll actually benefit from this pedestrian spaces because they'll be able to use a little more of that sidewalk real estate. I think that, you know, that's one of the benefits is that we're not going to be using that space as much as we were in the past. I mean, I think that in all likelihood, while we can expect some people to come back into work. I don't think we're ever going to see the same. I'm hopeful from a global perspective that we're moving past commuter culture right now. You know, we're going to see people, you know, work from home a lot more, which means that driving their car into the office less. You know, we're seeing in Victoria a lot more people moving downtown. And I think that we may see a shift where, you know, you may see less office buildings in the future, but to replace them, we'll probably have, you know, more people living in apartments downtown and probably the same amount of people working in those apartments as we had in the office buildings in the past. So it's going to take some time to shift through it, but I think it's a great opportunity, both for cities and for the environment as we, you know, decrease our you know, these commuter traffic that we've been having for the last, you know, 60 years in North America.
It's a fascinating point. I mean, the kind of the multiple impacts and unintended consequences of this change. As you said, we may be seeing the end of the commuter culture, which would be interesting because, you know, from a planning perspective, there's been this desire to build according to smart growth principles and to concentrate, to cluster services and shops and density, residential density, around hubs. And, you know, as you pointed out, if it is likely that many folks are going to continue to work from home, and, you know, we live in Greater Victoria where there's a huge number of public servants who have been, for the most part, working from home over the last several months. If that continues, it's entirely possible that we're going to see the fulfillment of that smart growth principle promise that we'll begin to see people accessing goods and services in their more immediate neighborhood, that there'll be the development of more walkability and cyclability into those areas. And if people start returning to public transit, transit is built around getting people to and from those major centers. That we're beginning to see the development, not just in the city of Victoria, but in other communities around the capital region. We're seeing the development of significant bike networks in order to connect people to those places. So again, I think an unintended consequence, but certainly one of the upshots from this period may well be that we begin to develop our communities around that smart growth mentality, and that we begin to find success in people maintaining that much more local community-based presence.
I mean, I'm hopeful that is what we're going to see. I mean, it means some changes for planners as well. If we're not going to have the, you know, same commuter patterns, that means that we're going to need, you know, less bus traffic in the mornings and in the afternoons. But that means that maybe we can, you know, service some of those underserved communities a little bit better with transit, or maybe we can change the way that transit works around downtown. So it's going to mean some shifts for planning. But I think overall, you know, it really does create these opportunity for these walkable, you know, sustainable little centers where you can walk down to your little nearby center. And, you know, for me, it's North Park Village down there, and go to the hardware store, or go to the grocery store, go to the bakery, and those sorts of things all and have, you know, multiples of those that people can all walk to or bike to within a very relatively short amount of space. And Victoria's actually set up very well for that, compared to some places tend to have more of a very large hub and then very distance spokes. And Victoria, because it's on an island, nothing is really that far. And certainly also as a legacy of our streetcars in the past, we have these great little urban centers all over the city of Victoria. So, you know, there's probably, you know, 7 or 8 within a 20-minute walk of my house.
Your comment about streetcar destinations, the hubs that were created around the city of Victoria, really. Mm-hmm. I was told Cordova Bay actually was on one of the main train lines, which of course we now know is the Lochside Trail and the Galloping Yep. Goose, and that Cordova Bay was really built as vacation homes for people who were living in the city of Victoria. And those people who wanted to get out to the beach community could hop on a train in order to get out to Cordova Bay, which is why you find all of these small, low-rise beach frontage homes, which are now being replaced by these very large, probably very expensive homes in Cordova Yeah. Bay. But it's interesting that even in those days, it wasn't imagined as a suburban community. It was imagined as a vacation community. And now even that began to gradually build up. Cordova Bay, unlike a lot of parts of Saanich, has a village center. You know, there are shops and markets that exist in Cordova Bay. Some of them are being replaced now with much larger centers. But that was a product of, as you said, being at the end of that train line, or being a major stop on the train line.
No, it has a dramatic impact when you actually have well-designed transit. I mean, we're talking about, you know, 100-year-old transit-oriented development. Some of the pictures of what it was like there back in the 20s, 30s, 40s, with some of the beach just packed with, you know, 50,000 people, it was absolutely stunning, and it really was a vacation destination for people in Victoria. It's totally true. When you look at Victoria, you know, we were far ahead of our time when it comes to transit-oriented development, and we're very lucky to actually have the legacy, even if we don't have the streetcars still. You know, even things such as Estevan Village is part of it, or even some of those small places like, you know, Haltain Corners actually was a stagecoach stop back in the day, which is why you see Haltain Corners. So it has such a dramatic impact. And if we start looking at our transit system in that way, I think you're starting to see it in Vancouver with obviously with the SkyTrain system. We start looking at thinking about the same sort of planning principles, but applying it to the bike lanes and really creating these bike lane hubs along the new system that the city of Victoria is creating. And actually, you know, looking at our zoning and creating bike focused developments along those lines. So you could have, you know, apartment buildings that have very low parking or no parking at all, but excellent bike resourcing with, you know, a shop and all that sort of stuff. As we expand our bike lanes, I mean, is first of all, we need to make sure that all of the municipalities are on the same page. So we need to make sure that this is a regional network and not just something that ends at the borders with Victoria, because, you know, when it comes to the population that's going to move along them, it is actually the people outside of Victoria that are probably going to be moving along these bike lanes as much, if not a bit more, into the city. But I do actually think that there's an opportunity for us to be looking at it from a zoning perspective. Like I said, you know, the bike oriented development, I mean, I do think that, you know, especially if we're moving, you know, in this period, moving beyond the need for commuter cars, we're going to see less people having vehicles. And certainly in cities, we're already seeing that. Many, you know, parking garages not filling up in residential buildings. And yet we still have, you know, zoning requirements that buildings, you know, build, you know, one or two parking spots per unit as they go in. And I think that we could be shifting that. First of all, you know, digging these giant underground parkades costs a huge amount of money for developers. And if they could focus that instead on, you know, putting in some really excellent bike repair facilities in their buildings, or making their buildings, you know, more environmentally friendly, you know, putting some solar on there or some wind generation, instead of digging these giant things down, or perhaps even just lowering the price so that, you know, it makes it a little bit easier for people to get into a condo. And like I said, you know, we're seeing, especially in a lot of the new buildings downtown, people not taking up all the parking space that's being allocated in there. And yet we're requiring it for so many of them.
It's not just downtown, although obviously it's much easier to make the argument for not meeting the minimum parking requirements in downtown when it is so accessible and people have the ability to walk or ride a bike. Or get around by public transit. But some of the experience that I've heard or seen in developments that have occurred outside of the city has been a very similar story, particularly when those buildings, condominiums, are geared towards first-time homebuyers, young couples getting into the marketplace. If it's built on a major corridor or adjacent to a major corridor, if it's close to shopping, even if it's close to the Lochside Trail or the Galloping Goose, the experience has shown that those parking spots are not taken up.
I know that some other cities have gone to remove some of those parking minimums that sit on zoning books, and I'm hoping that it's something that we might see in Victoria.
I know we've just seen Edmonton remove its parking requirements, and I just saw something that looked like New Zealand had done away with parking requirements. Seems like there's a movement towards removing that barrier, which I think is probably a major barrier to the cost of construction and development, and then of course a barrier to folks who want to get into the market.
I mean, I think that really we should be allowing developers to you know, market their buildings, and if there really is demand for people to have three parking spots, then they're going to start building those buildings without us telling them to. And if there isn't, then let's let them build those buildings without the parking spaces in it, and they can use that again to lower the cost or to do other things with the building, which I think, you know, just creates such great opportunities.
What is the Thomas Guerrero reflection on the modern era?
People need to go out and try these new spaces and not be, afraid of them. I mean, I look at the North Park, the new pedestrian space on North Park in North Park Village, and, people are starting to use it more and more, and it's so exciting to see, but it took a long time because there's just this fear of stepping off the sidewalk.
If you are supporting the kinds of changes that are taking place where we're creating these pedestrian priority zones and there's an opportunity to get together with friends in these open spaces, the way that that's going to be proven successful and the only way it's going to endure and perhaps be replicated in other areas is if people show up. Now more than ever, it's clear that there are environmental benefits that come along with it. Perhaps equally important is that you're going to create employment and jobs in the community, and you're going to keep someone's struggling business in business and hopefully thriving based on changes that might be taking place to better support them and see them succeed in the long run.
Oh, definitely. I mean, if you've been down to Market Square and enjoyed a beer in the space in there, where the Drake has set it up, is just absolutely stunning. And to think that, 8 years ago, maybe even less than that, people were saying that Market Square was a dead zone. Here it is, probably the liveliest spot in the entire city. And all that place is full of local businesses, full of great places to eat and have a drink, and really is become this lively hub of the city.
Thomas Guerrero, and the site is Sidewalking Victoria.
If people have any thoughts on things that they would like to have me touch on the blog, then please reach out to me. My contact information is all there, and I'm always happy to hear from readers. And Dean, I just want to say thanks for having me on. This is actually great, and like I said before, this is actually something that we've actually needed in the city.
Well, thanks so much for agreeing to be part of it.
No worries. Yeah, it's been great conversation.
This has been another episode of the Amazing Places podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. Be sure to check back weekly for another episode. Until then, let's get out there and enjoy these amazing places.